My email address, you can call and reach me by phone, and I'll get back to you, and we can play phone tag for a while, or you can send me an email message if you're online. Tharney@ucc.edu, all lowercase. It's not case sensitive. What I try to do is to get back to the students who email me within 24 hours. So if something's happening and you need to get in touch with me, probably your best bet if you want a rapid return is to get a hold of me by email. This is the required textbook, not optional, required textbook for this course. Kagan and Siegel's Introduction to Psychology, 9th edition. That's the student study guide. It's built right under the book. No additional cost. You read the chapter, then there's the student study guide. Pulls out all of the important terms, concepts, and ideas. Gives you a little quiz. Italicizes things that are important. Gives you definitions. Kagan and Siegel, 9th edition. This is Wadsworth. Thompson Publishing. Now, you will probably find this exorbitantly overpriced in the college bookstore, as are most things. If you choose not to purchase it there, let me give you a source. Half.com, an online facility where you can order books. I have a son who just finished his program for his master's degree, and he ordered all his books through them. Saved at least 50% or more on each book new. And they'll get it to you within 5 to 7 days.
Same book.
You don't want to do that? Fine. Go to the college bookstore. If you have another resource, that's okay. But this is the book that we need. Now, you don't have to read that book in its entirety. You are going to have to read those chapters that I assign. And I don't mean to sound presumptuous here. We don't cover the chapters in that book in the order in which it's written. This course is my course, and it's not designed around that book or any other book. I've used many. So what you're going to find is that the arrangement of the chapters in terms of your reading responsibilities are somewhat different than they're presented in the book. So you don't have to read all the chapters. You do have to read the ones that are included on the course outline, and you have to read them in the order in which they are assigned to you. In the interest of saving half a forest, I did not have the course outline printed up today. Because by this time next week, or certainly by, this time next week, I would say, there's going to be a lot of people changing courses and trying to rearrange their schedule. Once the population settles, everybody knows what course and section they're in, then I'm going to distribute the course outline. In the meantime, it will be certainly sufficient for you to obtain a copy of the book by sometime next week and read the first chapter. That's the one we're going to cover first. It deals with the history of psychology. In addition to the reading of the book, here's what you're responsible for. Any material that I give you in writing, and I'm going to give you a lot. Summaries. Lists of important terms and concepts. Review sheets. Study guides. All of these things. If I give you something in writing, in addition to this, you are responsible for its content. In addition to the lecture material, which you're expected to take notes on, I will be showing a number of films in here this semester. If I show you a film, you're responsible for the content of that film. Who are the important people who appear in that film? What are the terms or topics or ideas or theories they introduce? What's important in the film? Typically what I do is put stuff on the board that you need to make special note of as the film was going on. So film time is note-taking time, not nap time. There are some students who, when the lights go down and the film comes on, they prefer to put their head down and go to sleep. That becomes a kamikaze mission very quickly in this course. So, material I give you in writing, material that's contained in the films, and my lecture notes, what I talk about in here. 50% of any evaluative experience you have in the course. Notice that phraseology? I used to call them tests, and then students used to come to me and say, Professor Tharney, I suffer from test anxiety. And I was so stressed out I couldn't study last night before your test. So I don't call them tests anymore. They're evaluative experiences. They are opportunities for you to ostentatiously display your knowledge and expertise in the field of psychology, and they will occur periodically over the course of the semester. They are all announced, please note, a week to 2 weeks in advance so you have adequate time to prepare. Within the next few days, I'm going to have somebody come in here to talk to you. At my request. That person is a former student of mine who now works here in the Academic Learning Center. What is that? Well, we like to refer to that place over there now. Isn't English a wonderful language? We are constantly reinventing it. That is called a learning resource center. That's not a library. To you and me, it's a library. To them, it's a learning resource center. We've got people in this country who are now living in what's called a meretricious relationship. Think about that word. What the hell is meretricious? You're either married, not married, but we have people living in meretricious relationships, according to the government. The Internal Revenue Service talks about postal queues. Anybody here know what the hell postal queue is? Get this. Persons of opposite sex sharing living quarters. That's a postal queue. English is a wonderful language. Over in the library, on the first floor, as you walk in the door, veer to your right. Go around that front desk. Go all the way down to the back, and in the back of the library on the first floor is a place called the Academic Learning Center. The director of that facility is a friend of mine. One of the people who works there is a truly outstanding tutor. Her name is Carolyn Thomas. Anybody know her? Carolyn Thomas is an outstanding tutor who 2 years ago was nominated for a national award for her skill and expertise in tutoring. She's known as the Tharney tutor. I give her all my handouts. I give her all my materials. She knows exactly what I'm covering in my classes for my students. She's going to come in here and talk to you. Now, the best part of this, it's free. F-R-E-E. The Ohio State Marching Band. She'll be spelling that out, scripting that way. Doesn't cost you a damn dime. Free tutoring at the Academic Learning Center by some students has been defined as their survival kit. So if you find yourself falling behind, or you don't know what's important and what's not important, or what to extract from the chapter that you really need to know versus what's conversationally presented, the ALC is the place to go. And they have several good tutors there. The one that I recommend is Carolyn Thomas for Psych 101 and some of the other courses that I teach. Okay. More bad news. Let's see. Over the course of this semester, you can expect to have at least 4 major hourly exams in this course. They are all designed by yours truly. They are not published by anybody. I don't get them from a publisher. I make up all my tests. They're called hourlies because that's how much time you have to take them, 1 hour. What are they like? As one of my former students said, like a sharp stick in your eye. They are rigorous. They are designed to be that way. I believe in the pursuit of excellence, and I think students who really work at it are the ones who want to be rewarded. So you will find that they will not insult anyone's intelligence. They are rigorous. If you adequately prepare, you should do well. They are all, please note, objective, multiple choice type tests. They are all graded on a normal curve of distribution, rather than on an absolute scale. They are all announced a week to 2 weeks in advance of their occurrence so that you have adequate time to prepare. For the first 2 or maybe 3 of those, I attempt to conduct, at least certainly for the first 2 tests, an in-class review in addition to announcing them in advance. And if we're getting along really well, I'll give you a practice test or two to take home so that you can use those as an outline after you take them to form your study outline for each test. Please note, they are all of equal value. None of them is weighted more heavily than the others. None of them is cumulative. One picks up where the last one left off. The first three of these unit tests you will have in class. The last one, the final test in the course, is not a comprehensive final exam. It is a final test. It covers the last portion of the course, even though it is given during the final exam period. I try to schedule it early on, if it's at all possible, although I don't really have control over that. The registrar's office does, so the students can get it out of the way before they get into their cumulative final exams. They are multiple choice if you study. They are multiple guess if you don't study. I'd rather you had the opportunity of taking a multiple choice test. Statistically, it's been demonstrated to me by a friend of mine who's a statistician that if a student comes in cold and hasn't prepared for one of those tests and take it, by the time they get to question number 50, the odds are 900 to 1 against their getting it right. So it gets worse instead of better as it goes along. So I'd rather you took a multiple choice test rather than a multiple guess one. So we review in class. I give you review sheets. I give you study outlines. I attempt to avail you of free tutoring to assist you in passing. Can't do any more than that. Now, good news. Some people's eyes are starting to glaze over and roll back in their heads, so let me give you some good news. Two items of good news. Number one, there is no comprehensive final examination in this course. Four tests, all of equal value, period. One picks up where the others leave off. Next, there's no paper required in this course. I'd rather you knew something about psychology before you decided to become an author in the field and write something about psychology, so there's no paper required in the course. But don't lull that you into a false sense of security. It's a rigorous course. What do I mean by that, some students ask me? Well, to be quite honest with you, across the board among all professors of psychology, the statistics are approximately the same. This course has the same attrition rate as physics, chemistry, and biology. And students often say, psychology, how hard can it be? You'll see. This is not Dr. Phil. The things we deal with in here are a little more substantive and a little less faddish, if we can use that terminology. What else? I think, in all honesty, by the time that you get to this level of your educational experience, you have the right to select courses, not just based on the title of the course, but who's teaching it, what their background is, what they have to offer, what they bring to the table that you can't get out of that book. If when I'm finished there is anything that I have said that is inconsistent or incompatible with your expectations or what you hope to take from this course in psychology, do us both a favor. Don't stay in the class and bitch at the end of the semester. Book you right down the hall, get a drop-in ad slip, and take your 3 credits in psychology with somebody else. No questions asked, no hard feelings. Do us both a favor. I'm a licensed clinical psychologist and my background is in applied psychology. Now what does that mean? You can take all people in the field of psychology and divide them into 2 categories. Category 1, these are called academicians or academic psychologists. Some refer to them as people involved in basic psychology. They teach, they conduct experiments, they do various kinds of research, they write, they publish. Their job is to discover things about psychology that are added to the body of knowledge called psychology. So their quest is knowledge for its own sake. They teach, they write, they publish, they experiment. Bravo. I have a great deal of admiration and respect for what they do. That's not my thing. The other people in the field of psychology are called professional psychologists or applied psychologists. What they do is to work in the field of psychology with people, applying psychological principles and theories in their work with people in their everyday life situation. Largely what they do, for want of a better way, a more generic way of expressing it, they engage in activities that could be defined as planned intervention in the lives of people to restore them to more effective functioning, to perform either rehabilitative or habilitative services for people, psychological testing, counseling, therapy, family counseling, etc., etc. That's the group that I belong to. Most of my experience, 30 plus years, I know, you probably didn't notice I have more than two or three gray hairs. It often eludes people, but I've been around a while, and most of what I've done has been in applied psychology rather than academic psychology. I've done some of that of necessity, practically at gunpoint, as part of programs that I've been through academically, but I prefer to work with people. So, to wit, here's what I bring to this experience, and if it's not agreeable with you, then by all means, take your three credits. This is section 14, that means there are at least 13 other sections before this one that you can take your three credits and cite. My original training, I got a bachelor's degree in psychology. That was before the field of psychology. This discipline, by the way, is the most popular college major in the United States. Most people don't know that. They think it's computer information, whatever. No, psychology. Most popular college major in the country. More people major in this subject than any other. And use it as a launching platform for other fields, social work, law, whatever. At the time I majored in psychology, it was known as the study of the id by the odd. We were considered just a little less peculiar than philosophy majors if you majored in psychology. I got out of college and realized that a BS in psychology or a BA in psychology and 75 cents would get you a cup of coffee at the local diner, but you couldn't find employment. So luckily I did some other things so that when I got out of college, I could continue my education part-time at night while working at another job, which is what I did. My original graduate program was a master's degree in a 64-credit master's program in counseling psychology, and then I then went to work in a variety of college and university counseling centers, family counseling centers, marriage and family counseling centers, that kind of thing. As a result of that experience, after about 6 or 7 years, I became interested in another field and got really fascinated with the whole area of psychological testing and evaluation and diagnosis and that. So I went back to school for a 2-year post-master's program and certificate in school psychology, and then worked as a school psychologist on a consulting basis for 7 years. It became, after a while, as the laws in New Jersey changed, a rather frustrating experience because I discovered that school psychologists were basically strictly diagnosticians who then, after assessing a person's problem and figuring out what was wrong, was expected to refer that child or adolescent to an appropriate person in an agency or facility someplace where very often a kid in need of help immediately went on a 6 or 8 month waiting list before they got the kind of service they needed. And I found that a very frustrating experience. So after about 7 years, I know I'm a slow learner, after about 7 years I left school psych. Decided to go back to school one more time, and at this point Mrs. Tharney, God bless her, was beginning to view me as an itinerant fruit picker in the field of psychology, and I was afraid that one more go-around and she'd pack my bags and put them on the front porch one day. By the time I got home from school, I'd be out of the house. But she stuck with me one more time. I went back to school, this time for training in clinical psychology, and I did my third internship, one in counseling, one in school psych, and the third and last one was a whopper. It was a 1-year unpaid internship in clinical psych. And then I went to work as a clinical psychologist. I worked at Marlborough Psychiatric Facility. I worked at a number of psychiatric hospitals in New Jersey. I also went to work in a variety of mental health clinics for children and adolescents. I then got a job working, it was a fascinating job, but one that causes a very high rate of burnout. I then got a job working as a senior clinical psychologist. A promotion went along with it, in the first and only suicide prevention center in the state of New Jersey, dealing with children, adolescents, and adults who were at risk in terms of suicide lethality potential. They sent a group of us out to Los Angeles, California, and we studied the original suicide prevention center out there and then came back and established one here in Jersey. But little did we know that it was the only one in New Jersey, and it covered the whole state. So we were dealing with all kinds of crises, mental health crises. Newark, Camden, Trenton, Elizabeth, New Brunswick, you name it. All around the state, we had a bank of telephones that we used to contact rescue squads, police departments, what have you, around the state. I worked there for 7.5 years, which is about, I don't know, maybe 5 years longer than I recommend for anybody who wants to come out tightly wrapped. It is an incredibly stressful experience working with people who are self-destructive. That's the same reason why I left working at the state psychiatric hospital. I discovered the old saying was true. You can't tell the patients from the employees without a scorecard. I looked around me at the people who were working there, and I couldn't always tell who was staff and who was a patient. I said, feet don't fail me now. Get the hell out of here. So I did, and that's how I ended up in another facility. I then went to work in the first comprehensive community mental health center that was established in the state of New Jersey, dealing with adolescent and adult clients on an outpatient basis. And after being there about 7 or 8 years, I was in the personnel office one day when somebody let it slip. And they said, hell, you know, Farley's been here long enough. He's got a pension down in Trenton. He could retire anytime he wants to. And my ears perked up. Me, retire. And believe it or not, in spite of my youthful appearance, somewhere down in the bowels of the state office buildings in Trenton, I have a pension waiting for me to collect it as soon as I'm older. So I decided to leave the public sector and went to work in a private group practice with two other psychologists, two psychiatrists, psychiatric social worker, and a marriage counselor. I was there for a number of years, and finally, this is a true story, so help me. I was sitting talking with one of my clients one day, a very bright young woman, who also happened to be a prostitute. And that's how she made her living, and during the course of our interaction, she stopped the session and she said, excuse me, this conversation that's going on between you and me. She said, is this what they call social intercourse? And I said, yes. She said, then you and I are in the same business, aren't we? I said, I guess you have a point. It was at that point in time that I decided that there was something perhaps potentially neurotic about a person who sits on their fanny listening to other people's problems for 8 to 10 hours a day and collects a fee for it. So I decided to move on. I went back to the Graduate School of Applied and Professional Psychology at Rutgers University for some additional training. And today, although I'm no longer in practice, I have an indefinite leave of absence, whatever the hell that is. I do consulting work. I travel around the state of New Jersey, and I do consulting work, often under the auspices of the New Jersey State Department of Education, training teachers and school counselors and school psychologists and school administrators how to recognize children who are at risk in terms of suicidal behavior. Most people are unaware of the statistics that in this country, every year, somewhere between 7 and 8,000 children between the ages of 6 and 14 successfully take their own lives. And what I try to do is to train the people who are on the front lines of dealing with these kids to recognize depression when it occurs in childhood, to recognize kids who are at high risk, how to effectively intervene and get kids the kind of help that they need, rather than doing that kind of work myself, to train other people to perhaps engage in some kind of preventive activity. That, in addition to teaching, is what I do. The experiences in my life that I have to draw upon that are above and beyond what's in the textbook are the kinds of things that I just talked about in here. And if any of those things make you feel uncomfortable or it's something other than what you expected in this course, then you really should actively consider taking this course with somebody else. This is not an experimentally oriented, research-oriented course. It's more of a people-oriented kind of course, which is why, beyond general psych, most of the courses that I teach have to do with people who are going into fields where they're going to work with people. I teach an awful lot of nursing students. I teach child psychology. I teach abnormal psychology. I teach techniques of counseling and interviewing. I teach some of those kinds of courses. And this is my soiree into that academic venue. So, let's see. the, anybody got any questions? I'm married, I got four kids, five grandchildren, another one on the way. Anything else that you are interested in asking, if I think it's any of your business, I'll try to answer for you. If I don't, I won't. Got a couple of things that you need to know about. Number one, I take attendance every day. That's not by choice. It's because I'm supposed to do that, and I do. This college has an attendance policy. It is not my function to establish policy, but to implement it. And the policy is, you have two unexcused absences from this course. The state says we need to have 45 contact hours with each other in order for you to earn 3 credits in this course. And that's what you're going to earn. The college says you have 2 unexcused absences. Students like to call them cuts. Fall off the class. Okay. If that's what you choose to do. Think about the snow and sleet in December before you decide to blow off my course, because it's a foggy, rainy, or chilly morning, and you'd rather not get out of bed and go to school and take your other classes. Use your unexcused absences judiciously. In addition to that, as you'll see on the handout that I'm going to give you, there are valid reasons why students can't be here. Those are excused absences. Religious observance, military obligation, health issues, court appearances. People have kids who get sick. People have a dental emergency. Things happen. So, if you can't be here, and it's for a valid reason, and you can give me some kind of written documentation, and I don't mean a note from your mother, but written documentation, or a copy of the subpoena that you have to appear in court, or your summons for jury duty, then you can get an excused absence. But you only have 2 unexcused ones. Now, here's where the rub comes in. My tests are announced in advance for a reason. Because tests are designed to be taken when they're scheduled, not when people damn well feel like taking them. Take them when they're scheduled. If a valid reason comes up, for God's sake, call me or Carol. State your reason. Unfortunately for you, I'm the guy who distinguishes between the excuses and the reasons. For a valid reason, you may have an opportunity to take a makeup on that test, another form of it, at a later date. If you simply don't show up, and I give a test on Thursday, and you come and see me the following Tuesday, and say, by the way, you know that test you gave last week? When can I take a makeup on that? Here is my answer. I'll give it to you right now. Never. Never. Not you, not your children, not your grandchildren will ever see that test. You blew it off, you're gonzo. That's a zero, it's figured into your average. You're only having 4 tests. That means if you get a zero on one of them, there's no way in hell you're gonna pass this course. So, if you got a valid reason, call. Otherwise, show up. Okay. You are waiving your right to a makeup if you don't contact me and offer a valid reason for not being here. That's one of the few things in this world that drive me absolutely bonkers. Students who don't show up to take tests when they're scheduled. It's called responsibility. What I'm looking for is the courtesy of a phone call to explain your circumstances. If you choose not to do that, see ya. That's fine, but see ya. Don't let the door hit you in the rear end on the way out. Here's the other part of the college policy. For excessive absences, it is the policy of this college that an instructor should lower a student's grade by 1 full letter grade for excessive absences. What's excessive? That's up to me. 3, 4, 5 cuts, whatever. Anything over 2 is fair game. So you don't earn credit by keeping that seat warm while you're here, but you can lose credit by not showing up because you just don't feel like it, or because there's one hell of a pong game going down in the cafeteria. I often come to class, and on my way, I come through the cafeteria, and I see people sitting in there who are supposed to be in my class playing computer games. I make a mental note of that. I'll catch you next time. I don't get mad. I get even. Okay. Who's got questions? I'd be glad to respond to them for you. Anybody have any questions? Speak now for a moment.
Yes. Use of recording devices?
Use of recording devices. Fabulous question. I strongly recommend it. Here, 2 conditions. Number 1, I would like you to tape my lectures. This is the slowest you will hear me speak for the next 15 weeks. Trust me. Feel free to bring a tape recorder. When class begins, I need at least one person to raise their hand and say, Professor Tharney, permission to tape. I will then say, yes. Then anybody in here can tape if they want to. But don't you dare tape a class without asking permission. Everybody in this room has a right to know that if they raise their hand, ask a question, give an example, or relate something we're talking about to their personal life, that they are being tape recorded. And if they don't, it's a violation to their right to privacy, and it's a violation of academic freedom. So if you want to tape my class, ask. I will always give permission. Or I'll say, well, no, you can't tape right now because I'm showing a film and it violates our licensing agreement with the producer of the film. See, we have to sign agreements and we pay these people every semester for showing films. If you audio tape one of those films, it violates that licensing agreement. They can then lift it and the college can't use those films anymore. And there's a fine involved. So you can't tape during the videotapes or films that I show. Otherwise, under most normal circumstances, yes, you can even tape the review sessions. But here's what I want you to do. Go buy yourself a pack of cheapo tapes, three of them in a pack. Kmart, whatever. Only use those three tapes. You know what's going to happen? That's going to force you to transcribe that tape into notes and put it in your notebook. I've had people from other countries, for whom English is an acquired second or third language, say to me, you know, I heard what you said in the beginning of the semester, but I never transcribed those, and I don't know what to do. We have a test coming up on Monday or Tuesday, and I have 8 hours of tapes to listen to and then study. Don't shoot yourself in the foot. Transcribe off those tapes. Put it in your notes so you have a hard copy of what you can study from. While you're listening to those tapes, stop them. Back them up. Listen again. Did you miss something? Back it up. Listen again. That way somebody doesn't keep putting their hand up and saying, can you repeat that, please? Can you say that again? Because we'll never finish the course. Okay? So, by all means, tape. But let everybody know they're being taped and always ask permission.
Permission to tape?
Sure. Okay. Anybody have any other questions? Please, feel free. My bark is worse than my bite. No further questions? Here's the book you have until next week to get it. Get it from whatever source you want to, but make sure you get it. When you get it, listen up. I strongly recommend that you start by reading chapter 1. That one we do in order. You can start with chapter 1, and please believe me, you may want to read that chapter more than once, and I'm going to be spending a week or two discussing what's in chapter 1, because it is packed with information. Now, would you please be so kind as to pass those cards to your left? When they get to the first person in each row over here, would you please be so kind as to pass those cards forward down to this young woman over here? And everybody just remain until I get all of the cards.
The card? Maybe a pound.
Professor.
Sir.
You said there was two questions? For the back of the car?
Yeah. What previous courses do you have? Oh, yeah. Well, don't worry about it. We'll take care of that. That's another item of business we can address later.
All your
courses, any previous courses you have listed. Yeah.
Oh, there.
Just pass it forward when you get to the first person in each row.
There you go. 66.
You don't have to have it by Tuesday. I'm going to give you plenty of material.